comics,
movies,
music,
video games,
technology,
Blu-ray,
television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Previously on Out Now with Aaron and Abe.
Are you ready, Aaron?
Yes, space. The final frontier. These are the voyages that I could crap on.
Dude, those aren't the words.
Honestly, I care so little about Star Trek that I don't even want to do this recording.
But we're going to go and watch Ender's Game.
Oh, in that case, Mr. Stark, I'm going to offer you the choice. Do you want an empty life or a meaningful death?
So now you're just going to do Ben Kingsley quotes from Iron Man 3?
You know what, Abe? It belongs in a museum.
Okay, this conversation is over. I'll see you on Sunday.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording. This is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is
Abe. Bonjour.
Thank you. Out Now is a film podcast with Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We also bring a discussion about the latest movie trailers, box office results and predictions, a callback to past films similar to the main film of the week, games, and other fun stuff. This is episode 127, 127.
That's 10.
Hey, thank you. Tonight, we are talking about Ender's Game, the film adaptation of the very popular sci-fi novel. And joining us to discuss Ender's Game, we have, from the Thoughtful Slacker and riding over at the Celebrity Cafe, getting bullied in and out of the showers, Jose Cordova.
It's good to be back.
That's like an awful intro. I feel so bad for him now. He gets bullied.
And from Cinemaxwell, and one of the hosts of the Ichapod Cranecast, trapped in his own mind game, Maxwell Haddad.
Hello, everybody.
How are you guys doing?
Splendorific.
Doing pretty good. Awesome. The bullying sucks, but I'll get over
okay.
it.
Just like, yeah, man, you killed that guy.
Just need to find my chems and then I'll be okay.
There you go. Okay, now that our yearly callback's out of the way, let's move on to some announcement stuff. What do we got? You know, it was Halloween. That's over now. We can all move on. It's November. Here it is. We got it. Turkey month, right?
Yes. Yeah, can't wait. 20 pounds of something.
That's it. If you didn't catch our Halloween pod, our special Halloween commentary episode, we do have that out. You can check that out
right now. It's still
up. It didn't go down. let's see. I guested on the Battleship Pretension podcast. We had David Bax over at Battleship Pretension over on our podcast for The World's End a few months back, and now I guested over there talking about the some of the best horror movies of all time. So feel free to check that one out over and just check out that show in general because that's a fun podcast, The Battleship Pretension. And what else? iTunes reviews and ratings, good to get those. Helps out our show, helps other people find our show, and we'd love to have more people find our show and interact with ourselves along with the others on the old Facebook page. But were you to send us a review or rating on iTunes, we will enter your name into a raffle. Eventually, we will pick two names from said raffle and award those two people with a two-pack of Blu-rays. So feel free to get on top of that because it's winning stuff for free. It's that simple.
No comment.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you were going to say something, so you didn't.
No, I was like, winning stuff for free. I was like, yes. Who doesn't want that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so yeah, that's going to do it for some announcements. Let's get to it, guys. Let's get to some Know Everybody. Each week we ask each other a few questions, try to set the tone for the podcast, and better get to
Know Everybody.
We're getting there.
I still can't get it right, man.
We're getting there.
Still can't get it right.
It's okay. It's been 2 years. I'll start this one out this week. Jose.
Shoot.
Have you ever wanted to go 0G?
I think I would be okay with it. I have a problem with heights. So I guess it depends on where. If I like go 0G in like a 10-foot by 10-foot room, I think I'd be okay.
Like real 0G too, not just like Richard Branson plays you up in a plane for like 10 minutes. Like, like extended stay in zero gravity.
I think it'd be awesome. I feel like I might lose my lunch. But, I mean, they train you for that, right? I used to want to be an astronaut when I was a kid, one of the reasons I ended up becoming an engineer. But, so, yeah. I think it'd be fun.
Cool. Very cool.
Okay, let's go Maxwell.
Yes.
All right, so I'm going to take, I think what you, usually when we talk about book adaptations, people ask, you know, what's your favorite book adaptation? But I think I'm going to take you in a different direction and say, what's your favorite movie based on a book you didn't like?
If there was, like, some book that you didn't like, but you saw the movie, and you're like, hey, I like that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. So
I think didn't like word that better.
Didn't like the book, but did like the movie?
Yeah.
Yes.
Has that ever happened?
Nothing comes to mind.
I need better questions, clearly.
I'm trying to. I want to think. This is a good question, though. I'm trying to think of
it. It is a good question.
It is a good question, but it's not. I would require further thought.
Yeah.
It's so you're saying it's too good a question. So,
yes.
Do you have an example, Jose? Is there something that you?
Well, I think for me, off the top of my head, that was Atlas Shrugged. I didn't even finish the movie, but I thought that one was one of those kind of like it's so bad it's kind of terrible, or it's so bad it's kind of fun to watch.
Go, Maxwell. Yeah.
I have an answer. The Notebook.
There
you go.
You know, and it's kind of cheating because I read the book after I saw the movie, but I thought the book was terribly written. But I actually really liked the movie, so
yeah. You know what? I have a pretty legitimate answer now that I think about it. Back when the Twilight craze hit on the books, I pounded through them in like a couple weeks or whatever, and I hated the ending to the last book. I won't spoil it for anybody who I don't know still wants to read them for whatever reason. But the ending portion of that film, they do some crazy stuff at the end.
Which I still don't know about, by the way, and I have not watched the Path of Light twice. For some reason, I have tried.
Like, that ending portion, I think Scott Mendelson from the show really enjoyed that as well. I think that ending part is, like, worth watching that movie just to watch that crazy-ass ending.
I will also agree with that. That ending is bonkers.
I'm glad that I've never seen any of them.
Don't even watch the first four. Watch that last one.
There's probably a few Stephen King books that people like as a movie version better than a book, just because I know a lot of his books kind of people don't like some of the endings of his books. Sometimes the movies try to.
Maybe some of his short stories that you know are fine made better movies when they were expounded upon.
Like, I know he likes what Frank Darabont did with The Mist better than what he did with the story.
Okay, I will ask this to Aaron.
Yeah.
Think back throughout the career of Harrison Ford. If you were in a life or death situation, which of the many characters that Harrison Ford has played would you want mentoring you and why?
Mentoring me. Okay.
Let's
see. That cancels out a few already.
Sabrina's gone.
Yep, exactly. As well as, so is Working Girl. He just wanted me to shake my shit on the street. I guess Mosquito Coast Harrison Ford is probably a good one for that one. Hmm. Yeah, he seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders. And if you're mentoring River Phoenix, that's never really a bad thing right there. He's like, I guess that didn't work out in the long run.
Well, I mean, whose fault is it? It's not his.
That 80s Harrison Ford appear like that, and like Witness, like they seemed like they seemed like they had a good handle on things. Not Frantic, that'd be too much.
What a delightfully unexpected answer.
What would you think, Indiana Jones?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that would be the well most people would go to first.
Well, you told me to think about it, so I did.
I did, and I appreciate your thought.
Ask it, he shall receive.
Obviously not Han Solo. That's like a terrible
mentor. No.
Like, that just doesn't work out for anybody.
Just shoot everybody.
Exactly. Classic Ford, just shooting everybody.
Stupid. Yeah.
I might choose his surly anchorman from Morning Glory.
No.
That was going to be my answer.
I would never choose that.
I had that ready. I don't even know the character's name. I don't think I even watched that movie, but that was going to be my answer.
42 would have too much like other things going on with that also, so be like, we're at a different time now, guy. Like, what are we doing? All right.
That's true.
Abe, what's the worst bully you've seen in a movie?
the worst bully I've seen in a movie. I don't know why he popped up first in my head, but he's that claymation kid from Paranorman. I forget his name.
The Christopher Plotz character?
Christopher Plotz, yeah, his voice character. I was like, that guy's mean, but does he redeem himself at the end? Sorta.
I mean, maybe. He's not as much of a dick.
he tries to grab Norman's sister's butt, but, you know, that's okay, right? Because she's got a big butt.
That's the reason.
I was hoping for, like, a longer awkward silence.
We don't have that kind of time, babe. Move on.
All right. Maxwell.
Yes.
Are you ready for battle school? Given your current state, like, whatever the question means to you, are you ready for battle school?
No. I am ready for command school, and that's because I feel like I'm so good I could skip right over battle school and hit up command school like a boss.
There you go.
Like, insert Lonely Island song right now. I'm just kidding.
All right, I'll ask Jose this question if he's available. Jose?
I'm still here.
Hello, Jose. Okay. In many movies throughout time, we have been presented with a variety of fictional schools. If you could choose any of them, which one would you go to?
Oh, I got the answer right away.
Well, see, I wanted to say Xavier's School for Gifted Children, but I have no powers, so I think I wouldn't do very well there.
I hear they're looking for janitors.
That wouldn't be bad. Let's go with the school from School of Rock.
Nice.
I need to up my musical chops.
Yeah, man, you're giving it to the man.
Rushmore.
Exactly.
Rushmore is my
Rushmore.
Answer.
Rushmore.
They have an aquarium now. They have Damn an aquarium it. Now. They finally answer. Got it.
That's a good one.
Land's a dead language, Aaron.
Right. No votes for Sky High.
Sky High would be pretty cool, actually.
That's the same logic as the school.
I still have no.
Yeah, I don't know how I would get there.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, the bus fee would be ridiculous. That's the reason why that'd be a tough school to go to, because of the bus fee.
I know. I'd have to fly, like, United or something. Oh, so that's me.
Yeah,
Let's go back to Aaron, then, I guess.
Yeah.
What is your favorite movie kid crew?
Like group of kids?
Crew
like
of kids.
In a gang?
Yes.
In a gang.
Yes,
well, I won't say the Warriors now, but they're a little older. Let's see. Kid
like
crew.
60 now.
Michael Beck. I don't know. Sandlot. Let's go with that.
Hello.
Yeah.
Good answer.
It's not those damn Lost Boys, that's for sure. Those kids need a parent.
I'll go
with the Sandlot crew. Or Moses and the gang, but they got their own issues and stuff. So, yeah, I'll go with Sandlot. There, that's a good one.
Wendy solid Pepper. Answer.
You can just go after Wendy Peppercorn and...
Yeah.
Play
Whirling
around
and lotioning.
Play around with Hercules. That's
have
high
some s'mores.
That's a yeah, exactly. How can we have s'mores something if we haven't had anything?
I haven't had
Are we all done? Did Abe have another question?
I can ask everybody. Go but forward. it's something that sort of related to Maxwell's. Which Harrison Ford person would you like to have an adventure with? Harrison Ford the archaeologist? Harrison Ford, the secret agent, or just Harrison Ford?
If it was like just Harrison Ford, would it be like hanging out in his ranch in Montana and just kind of like...
Yeah, he's just like giving you like kind words of advice while chewing tobacco and wearing his earring.
Oh, definitely that one.
Always make sure to button your trousers.
You know, acting's not that easy.
Yeah, I think you got to go regular Harrison Ford.
Regular Harrison Ford.
The best kind of hoe is the one that always says yes.
And that's how you play.
No, everybody. I like that he has farm jokes. That's funny. I'd probably hang out with like creepy Harrison Ford from The Conversation. That's probably the Harrison Ford I'd hang out with.
Yeah. Or beardy Harrison Ford from The Fugitive.
Yeah, like pre.
I should have mentioned that one. Damn it.
Pre-shaven Harrison Ford. That's a good.
Yeah. I would definitely.
I didn't tell my wife.
Well, whatever it is, I think I would like to spend 6 days and seven nights with Harrison Ford.
And Anne Heche.
No. Okay, moving on. That's how we do it, everybody. Let's move on down now, quickies.
Jim.
Each week on Out Now, we try to go over one main movie of the week, but we always see plenty other many movies of the week, so we have a little something called Out Now Quickies.
Jim.
Good enough. All right, Abe, anything?
Yes, I saw 12 Years a Slave. It is the feel-good comedy event of the year. We will talk about it later.
All right. Jose, have you seen any other movies this week?
Not anything new, but I rewatched Get Shorty just because it was going to expire on Hulu Plus, and yeah. That's just a fun movie.
It is.
Yeah.
Solid Elmore Leonard adaptation.
Yeah.
Maxwell, any movies?
Yeah, I saw All Is Lost this week. Very powerful and intense film with excellent performance from Robert Redford. Highly recommended.
Great.
Would you say you're able to connect with his character despite minimal information given to you about him?
Definitely. Just by, you know, I think it's a combination of familiarity with Robert Redford and as an actor, but also like his expressions and gestures. It just was very easy to connect. Yeah.
See, that's something I think too. I think it's weird when you have an actor like Robert Redford who you're familiar with just based on past work and just who he is in general, and that kind of helps a movie out sometimes where you don't necessarily need other information about said person. You just kind of rely on his persona.
Yeah, and it shows how important casting is. I mean, especially when your movie has one character, but it's smart casting.
Yeah, for sure. And like I could see how the argument is that it's maybe a cheat, but I think it just works in the film's favor of having someone like that as opposed to just random old actor.
Yeah.
I saw a few things this week. I saw The Book Thief.
Which, yay or nay?
I liked it.
Great. Okay.
I love the book.
I enjoy it. I think it. I haven't read the book, so I'm not sure like what's been retained and what hasn't been. I'm aware that there's, I guess, a chronology thing that goes on in the book that's different. The movie's very linear, if that matters to people that know the book. But I think it has a few things that feel a little bit Hollywood, to say the least. But overall, I found it affecting, and I thought the performances were quite good by the little girl and. Jeffrey Rush and Emily Watson, and I just mix those up now. Then Emily Mortimer, I thought it was a solid film.
They're all British.
I also, because it was Halloween last week, I was watching lots of horror movies, so I'll just point one out: The Blob. I watched with Stephen. That is an entertaining film, The Blob. I haven't watched that in quite some time. It's really fun. It's a really fun movie to watch.
Yeah, I remember watching through video stores when we were kids, and in the horror section, you see the cover for The Blob, and I was always freaked out by it.
Aaron, did you watch the Criterion Blu-ray?
Yes, I did.
Is it a good set?
It looks fantastic. The color on there is fantastic, just given that it's, 1954, something like that, I think.
So it looks like real bubblegum?
1958. It was a very good looking Blu-ray for sure, and it's packed with, it's like two commentaries on there, so other
sweet.
But yeah,
I thought of something, and I don't think that you guys, I heard you guys mention it a couple times, and it wasn't quite recently, but I saw that Instructions Not Included.
The Spanish film.
Yeah,
exactly. And I just thought I'd chime in. It was fine. I think it's cool to see a movie for the Latino crowd open that big and stuff. That was actually the first time my parents have gone to the theater in a long time. So
what is there something about it that you can pin that you think made it such a hit with that crowd? There's a lot of Spanish language films that open, but they aren't usually like big hits with.
That's true. I think actually, honestly, the main guy, his name's Eugenio Derbez. He's a pretty big Mexican comedian, almost like a sketch comedy kind of guy. He's been around doing that for a really long time, and so he's really well known to people like my parents, and I grew up watching him as well. So I don't know if it's just something like that, getting that guy to come in and do a film that's both in Spanish and English and kind of bring the two generations together. Honestly, I think that might be a big thing.
That's what I figured it was. I figured it must have been cool. Something about like a star.
Something in the cast.
Yeah. He's huge in Mexico and in other parts of like Latin America. So I imagine that's a pretty big thing.
I imagine the advertising for the film was probably pretty like pinpointed on certain channels and what have you to kind of get noticed.
Oh, yeah. The fact that my mom asked me about it and to go see it without me kind of mentioning it to her or whatever, they definitely got the word out there. So I just thought it was cool to see it get that big, and it's pretty enjoyable too. It's funny. He works as a stuntman in it, so there's a couple of
New
things in there. Yeah.
Well, good to know. Thanks, Jose, for answering one of the lingering questions about now there today. What is it about instructions not included?
I was doing my part.
There you go. All right, that's how you play out of quickies.
Deal.
Let's move on. Let's get to movie trailer talk, where we discuss some of the newest movie trailers and what we think of them when they're coming out and what have you. And the first one we have is for Hercules, The Legend Begins. Not to be confused with the Hercules film starring The Rock, the D is Silent Johnson. We have this version, directed by Renny Harlin of Cliffhanger and Die Hard 2 Die Harder fame, starring Twilight's Kellan Lutz as Hercules. This is a movie that's happening. It's called Hercules the Beginning. I think it kind of sets the tone right there. It is the beginning of the hero. Known as Hercules.
Hercules.
Sorry, Heracles. And that's what we got here. We got a big visual trailer. What do we think, guys? Maxwell, what'd you think of the trailer?
I'm gonna just say boo, and that's it.
Nice. Jose, thoughts?
To provide some context, I think this is, you know, people give a lot of crap to Hollywood about not having original ideas. And this is just like the movie that kind of exemplifies all that, I feel. You've got like Spartans. I thought I was watching like a 300 remake for a second. He's doing a weird accent. Kellan Lutz, the guy who's probably famous for being the buff guy from Twilight. I don't know, man. There's some like large scale stuff in there, and it looks like the production values look pretty cool. It's kind of sad that it's wasted on this movie. And we were talking about it during the pre-show stuff, but I was so sad that this wasn't the Dwayne Johnson Hercules, because that one I'm legitimately excited about just because of, you know, The Rock.
Abe,
first things first, this trailer is like 3 minutes long, so basically you've seen the entire film. This movie looks awful. I don't know why it's being made. There's nothing about it that I want to see. Besides the girl, she's very attractive, and she looks kind of tall. But
way to keep it a guy podcast like you.
Well, no, I mean the acting looks fantastic and the direction looks great. But no, there's this movie. I don't know. I was also confused as to why we didn't talk about the Dwayne The Rock Johnson version. But I didn't even know this movie was coming out. That's all I'll say about it.
Well, yeah, we just don't have a trailer for that one yet. They like just finished shooting it, I'm pretty sure. But regardless, yeah, I agree. This movie looks. I don't say this often, but it looks nearly unwatchable, mainly because I was getting bored during the first minute of the trailer for the movie. So, and like that sounds harsh. And I actually am a fan of Renny Harlin. I think he does have a good. I think he's a commendable force when it comes to kind of 90s action movies. But again, this is 2013, and where's Renny Harlin been for that while? 12 rounds, that's the answer to that question. There's just nothing about this that makes me like think I need to definitely catch this Hercules movie as opposed to the one starring Wayne The Rock, the Silent Johnson, or just watch old reruns of the Kevin Sorbo classic 90s TV
series. Yes.
So,
yes, that's...
Sometimes I mean, like... starring Xena.
Yeah.
Or the Disney musical.
Or the Disney... Yeah, Hercules.
That's some good shit.
From Zero to Hero.
It's a shame because... It's a shame because Scott Adkins is in there, and he's done good stuff on, you know, direct to video action stuff, and I don't know.
It is a little sad, yeah, because Scott Adkins is like every time he gets a chance to like excel somewhere, he's just shot down. Like Expendables 2 is like, yeah, you're in this, but you're just kind of around, and Jason Statham kills you with a knife.
Seriously.
Spoilers.
But I mean, do you enjoy films such as 300 and Gladiator and Thor? Apparently.
I have a better Scott Adkins example, by the way. Oh, Scott Adkins, you could be Deadpool, but you'll be making it look like Ryan Reynolds the whole time, so there you go. Hercules, The Legend Begins, arrives in theaters March 2014. There's not even a day, apparently. I guess they have to figure out...
Because they're waiting to push it back or something, just see what the crowd reaction is.
Well, they have to figure out how big of a success Pompeii will be before they actually decide on one day.
Oh, I forgot about that, too. Good old
they're just waiting for an empty weekend.
I'd rather watch a documentary about a volcano exploding.
Pompeii's a great story. Like,
it is.
I'm sad.
Yeah.
I wish it was a Roland Emmerich version that's like a soap opera, but just happens to be in, set in the past. Like, I'd watch that movie.
John Cusack?
With John Cusack as a stable driver?
I'm calling him right now.
Okay. Let's move on to our next trailer. We have The Lego Movie. We've talked about this before, but now we have an even better, even bigger trailer that really expands upon the story and the scope of things. I'll say this right now. I was at the panel for Comic-Con for The Lego Movie, and it's what's interesting to me about The Lego Movie, besides the fact that it's directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who made Caught If You Chance Meatballs and 21 Jump Street, Clone High, among other things. Their approach to this is everything you see in this movie will be feasible to do in real life. It would maybe take you, you know, thousands of hours to pull off some of the things they pull off in this movie, but there is just as much physical building of actual Legos as there is CG in this movie, if not more. So that's something that excites me about this film. With that said, let's start again with Jose. Jose, what did you think of the trailer for The Lego Movie?
This looks funny. I just thought it looked really enjoyable. The voice cast looks great. You mentioned the thing about, you know, this is, they wanted it to be things you can actually do, and I thought you could kind of see that. There's a great joke with the jumping jacks at the beginning, I think about that, because he said jumping jacks, and I was like, how's he going to do jumping jacks? He's a Lego character. And, there's a lot of, like, little tiny things. Some people, I don't know, I think don't enjoy Caught With a Chance of Meatballs for some reason because of, like, the constant stream of jokes, I guess.
Because of the sadness in their life. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that has to be the only reason.
But, if they didn't enjoy the constant stream of jokes, then they wouldn't have enjoyed Shrek.
But no, I just think this looks like a lot of fun, and there's just a lot of really good jokes in there. I laughed a bunch of times during this trailer.
Maxwell?
I am as enthusiastic for this as I was unenthusiastic for Hercules.
Okay.
I think it looks witty, satirical, and awesome. I'm all about this. I'm all about everyone involved. I think it's a great concept. I think it'll probably end up being a better Justice League movie than whatever Justice League movie we end up getting. If I could buy my ticket right now, I would be on Fandango doing just that.
Abe?
Yeah, I'm all on board, man. No question. I remember thinking when we first talked about it, I was like, why would they make a Lego movie? And then I saw the trailer. I was like, yes! This looks amazing! And the only thing that I could say is I didn't like the Pitbull song with the Christina Aguilera thing. That's the only thing that I didn't like. But yeah, this trailer this new one is, dude, I'm on board.
I feel like we take like a constant jab at Pitbull since like that happened.
When
he did the song instead of Will Smith at the end of Men in Black 3.
That still is some bullshit right there.
Yeah, I agree.
How do you have a Men in Black song without it? Like, I don't...
Anyway, I agree. I am very much in the camp on this trailer. We have two other trailers that premiered this week that we'll talk about next week with Thor that make, you know, sense to talk about with Thor. But between those two and this movie, like, I'm really excited for, like, the Lego movie maybe the most just because of how much fun it looks and how little I think there's a chance for disappointment involved in it. And it was maybe bold words, but I'm just really excited about the Lego movie. I haven't been steered wrong yet with Phil Lord and Chris Miller, and I just think they have such a great sense of comedy with this kind of property and, like, other properties, you know, similar to it, and let alone this cast, which looks amazing, and the various property licenses that they've gotten to kind of work in this movie, including, like, you know, DC stuff, among many others that haven't even there's a lot that haven't even been revealed yet, but yeah, I'm just super excited for it. So yeah, the Lego movie opens in theaters February 7th, 2014, and so yeah, that's what's happening there. Let's move on now. Let's get to the main review for Ender's Game.
When the aliens first invaded, they nearly destroyed us. They will be back. There's greatness in you, Ender. The world needs you. You were bred for this. You see things in a way we can't. You alone can understand the enemy. You will be the one to save mankind.
Unless we act now, Earth will be annihilated.
We're out of time.
He's not ready.
You're never ready. Go when you're ready enough.
Track them from below the ice. Shoot straight. Stay calm. Here we go.
Fire!
That should have been some of the trailer for Ender's Game. After years of development, the best-selling award-winning novel Ender's Game from writer Orson Scott Card has been adapted into a feature-length film, finally. Writer-director Gavin Hood has stepped in to bring this story to life with Asa Butterfield in the title role as Ender, a strategically brilliant young mind recruited into battle school by Harrison Ford's character, Graf, where he will compete with others to possibly rise to the ranks of a commander in the real world with the intention of stopping a race of alien invaders. Maxwell Haddad, did you enjoy playing Ender's Game?
I have to say, I actually enjoyed playing Ender's Game very much, which was a little bit of a surprise to me just based on some of the, you know, I try to have an open mind, but I felt like this project had a lot of, like, negativity leading up to it. But regardless of any of that, I found this to be a very charming and endearing movie. I thought Asa Butterfield is a big key to that success. He makes for an empathetic and emotional lead that I resonated with, and I thought the world building was smart. I thought the casting across the board was really good, and I thought Harrison Ford was probably as good, if not a little better, than he has been in a long time. He seemed engaged and connected with the material. I thought all of that then allowed the ending and the sort of thematic purpose of the film to come across in a sobering fashion. And the more I think about it, the more I like it. I was impressed.
I get the feeling that you've read the book before as well, right?
Yeah, I have. It's been a while, but I have.
Okay. Jose, have you read the book and did you enjoy the movie?
Ender's Game is actually kind of my default answer for when everybody asks what my favorite book or novel is. And so I'm a huge fan. I've read everything else in the series pretty much. So I was kind of like going into this with a bit of a sense of apprehension but also excitement. And that's almost how I came out of the movie. There's a lot of things that I really love, most of everything that Maxwell mentioned. And there's also some things that I had some issues with, but I think he nails it when he talks about the performances, you know, Asa Butterfield and really the entire cast. They really sell everything that's going on in the film, and they make a lot of the problems that I had with it, they make them just completely go away. And I think at the end of the day, I think this is going to grow on me, and hopefully once I watch it a couple more times, I think I'm going to end up loving this movie a lot. But right now I'm still a little split. But overall, I thought it was, there's so many little parts of it that I enjoyed too. Just being such a huge fan of the book that, I just ended up mostly loving it.
Abe,
I enjoyed this very very much. I do agree with Maxwell or Jose that there's some things I didn't really like about it as much. It doesn't really take away from the film. It's just more of just some aspects. I think that's primarily just some of the younger actors and their line deliveries. Not all of them, because I thought that a lot of them were really great. Was it Bonzo. Yeah. And also Bean. And Bean is like one of my favorite characters when I read him in the book.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he was very well portrayed in the movie.
I'm surprised that Bonzo's the one you're sticking up for, even though he's so over the top. But it's very.
Oh no. But I mean, like, you know, the actor. I mean, like the kid actor didn't do that badly. There was just like some weird line delivery from like folks like the brother, like Peter and what's her face,
Valentine?
Abigail Breslin. Just in the early part of the film, yeah, as Valentine.
We'll
but I mean,
that,
none of that.
We'll get to that, but I completely agree with you. Go on.
Yeah. I mean, the adult actors are great. The visuals were fantastic. They looked really, really good. And also the score wasn't bad. It's not ultra memorable, but it's pretty good. But I enjoyed it a lot. I think that there were some aspects that even I forgave from the book adaptation over to the script adaptation, just, you know, how many struggles that Ender had to go through, and also just in terms of some of like the loneliness that he feels. They take away a lot of his team members and things of that nature, but I mean, what really sealed it was the emotional high at the end, where he and Harrison Ford had this very frank conversation, and I was like, dude, this is exactly what I was expecting, and I really have all the trailers at all costs. So I went in there with kind of like average expectations, and I walked out pretty happy.
I'll say this right now to people that, I mean, you know, some people may be tuning in for the first time or whatever. We don't tend to, I don't try to plan the show based on just having a love fest for movies all the time, or like having a hate fest on things, or, you know, it's nice to have conversation that kind of splits the difference sometimes. But I also, I don't ask everyone what they think of the movies ahead of time. I like to keep it a surprise, and especially between Abe and I. So I never really know what's going to happen. But with that said, I love this movie too. I was very surprised that I love this movie. Ender's Game is one of my favorite books. And again, it's, you know, it's weird that, like, you know, all of us genuinely liked it, apparently. Jose, I guess, is the least honest, but even he, you know, likes aspects of it for sure. And, you know, so with that out of the way, I guess we're just going to get into a gushing mode now. But I mean, obviously there are things that don't work about this movie. And I think it's just because you can only do so much to make a movie out of a book like Ender's Game into something that's fitting for a PG-13 crowd, for general audiences everywhere. And so you have to drop things like the kind of the Valentine Peter storyline stuff that comes with the book, which takes away to an extent from what the film's trying to accomplish in some respects, but also kind of strengthens just the kind of forward momentum with Ender's character. And with that said, I think Asa Butterfield does a great job as Ender. I think he, among the other actors in this movie that I think hold this film together, I think Asa Butterfield does a great job of kind of portraying the things that are required of his character and the impact of certain scenes, especially when the film kind of rushes through certain aspects. I think Asa Butterfield's the reason that it kind of sticks. It all works in the end anyway. I walked in, you know, as we all are big fans of the book, I was trying to hold my expectations low, but going into it, but I came out just really enjoying it. There's things involving a kind of a zero gravity battlefield that you read that in a book, and it's fascinating and very cool to kind of read about. And then seeing it on screen, I had just this like flood of memories that I had coming back to me from reading the book, and I was just like, this is so cool. And even without take away the idea of like if you've read the book or not, I think it's just such a very fun adventure story for like kind of a younger audience, even adults as well. But I mean, I think it works to kind of capture a certain wonder in what's being shown in this world that is challenging. Like there's dark material here, and there are things about morality and the use of kids in warfare and things like that, that can certainly shake up perspective of certain things. But I mean, it works. It all came together very well, and I was very happy with this film overall.
I'll just jump in. One of the things that I appreciated most about it is how seriously it took these kid characters. I think it's a more common trend. I feel like there used to be a lot of science fiction movies involving kids where it was kind of goofy and dopey and silly, but I don't think this did that at all. And I give it a lot of respect for the way that it treated their emotions and their struggles and their training as seriously as if they were adults, which then, you know, makes the military aspect of it work all the more. And I noted, Aaron, that you said you felt certain things were rushed. And while if we're doing a direct comparison between the novel and the film, I would agree. But at the same time, in terms of the context of the film, I thought it made for some pretty pretty good pacing. The movie moved really well, while I think still conveying things well enough.
I agree with you, because I do think the pace is just right. It's a 2-hour movie as opposed to like a 2.5-hour movie, which it easily could have been. And I actually thought it was going to be like, I didn't know what the runtime I did not know what the runtime was going in. I thought it was probably going to be like 135 minutes or something like that. That seemed to just kind of click with me of like, yeah, that's maybe. But yeah, I do. It, you know, it's 2 hours. It runs well enough. I mean, I feel like if anything, there's probably super long cuts of this movie, but there probably was a cut. There could be a cut that's like, you know, like 20 minutes longer that maybe strengthens some of the relationships, like between Ender and his sister, for example. I think is a key one that kind of gets a little short shrifted in my mind, but I think it took out, I'm just completely guessing, I feel like there was material that's been cut out just to kind of keep the pace of the film moving, but I would not be surprised if we ended up seeing more on a, you know, an extended Blu-ray or even a deleted scene, stuff like that. But
well, I was just gonna say, I definitely think there's no time wasted here. Everything that's in there gets you know, get something across. It's definitely, you know, like you said, it's paced very well, and everything that's in there has a certain purpose, and it hits that purpose, and it has a good impact.
Yeah, I was going to basically say that too, which is just that everything that they did sort of excise out of the film, they excised certain characters and certain pieces, and that was okay because they kind of kept the core of the story there. And, you know, stuff with Valentine and Peter, yeah, I kind of was expecting something different at the ending, but what I did see on the screen was fine. It was something that made a lot of sense just because they didn't really have anything to do with, they didn't really introduce, you know, you to Ender's family all that much. So it would have been weird if you have this, you know, ending sort of similar to the book. The only thing I didn't really like was the transition. There's a transition period in the film, and it's also in the book, where Ender kind of gets very frustrated and burned out, and he requests to go back to Earth just to, you know, check things out. And, you know, it's a little bit more deep in the book, obviously, but in this one, it kind of just felt like they finished that very quickly just to get you to the end, the third act. And I think that's kind of something that I didn't like about
that's,
that.
That's the key area that I'm thinking of, actually, because I think it has to hit that point of, well, we have to move into the third act, but we also have stuff to tell you in this kind of midsection here. And I can see where a movie would get slow if you have more and more information being presented with you. But at the same, so yeah, I agree with you, because I do think there's less impact than I would have liked in terms of what's being accomplished in having Ender return to Earth for a second.
Right, but yeah, for the most part, it's great.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I think some of that too is that there's a, not like a big thing that happens to him there, but there's a very important interaction between him and his sister there that I think, I don't know if it's just the amount of time or the fact that, I mean, this is something in the books as well, that these are kids, but they're supposed to be the you know, the brightest of the brightest cream of the crop, and they don't talk like children. And I think even in some of those early scenes that Abe was talking about earlier, Abigail Breslin and the guy who plays Peter, the older brother, have some trouble with them. A couple of the other younger actors have some trouble with them too, because I think it's just phrases and words that you don't expect kids to say. But and some of them don't equip themselves very well. But other people, like, you know, the core group of kids do really well. And that's just it's those little things, I think, that kind of took me out of it. But at the same time, there's passages of dialogue that are straight from the book that I remember word for word. And it's just seeing things like that come to life off the page. It's just, I mean, that's part of the magic, you know.
You can't absorb these kind of losses. War isn't a game where you get to reboot and start over. That can't happen, understand?
Yes, sir.
Do you? Because I've trained others. Each one ultimately a failure.
All right, Colonel. He understands.
So I'm not the first?
No. But you will be the last.
Mm-hmm. It's honestly the beginning that kind of threw me a little bit. Like the opening scenes are like fine, but yeah, getting to kind of Ender's family life, it felt really awkward. It did feel like, I mean, what you have the actor playing Ender's older brother, whose name I can't remember just because he's no offense, but he's
30
just
seconds.
Yeah, but no, I mean, but no offense to the actor, but he's not a name like Abigail Breslin or Asa Butterfield is. Like, I know who those actors are, and so like it shows to me, if that makes any sense, that like it's like, all right, who's this kid, and he's not helping out in this situation. It just feels like we're just reading lines here, opposed to acting a scene out, and even Abigail Breslin is. Good an actress as I think she can be, I think she's just not given enough to do to really make an impact as Valentine overall. You kind of get a broad stroke idea of what she's supposed to be as a looking at it as a person that's just watching a movie, but I don't think I got as much of a connection as I would have liked to between in that relationship, which I think is a key part of the film in general, especially when it comes to kind of the way that the mind game enters into the film. And
yeah,
that was something I actually did enjoy, just because it's like, oh, that's neat thing to kind of see realized on the screen.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Especially, I honestly thought they would cut it out.
Yeah, I did. I was very surprised.
I was actually wondering, how are they going to take this, or how are they going to actually transcribe this from the pages onto the screen? Because it's something that, it's pretty critical to his development. And also, it's very dark. And so I was just thinking, wow, they did a pretty good job there. Good on you.
To explain, this film has in the book, has kind of a, while Ender's in training, he has kind of a tablet that gives him this game that he can play with himself when he's not, like, within, like, training with everybody else. And it's this kind of psychological test, essentially, and it incorporates his own fight. It's a weird thing to kind of visualize on screen, but
it's kind of cool.
It looked really cool, for one thing, and it managed to work itself into the story in a way that both matters to the plot, but also just works in terms of giving the viewer a visual of what they're supposed to be registering from that kind of scenario, which I was impressed with. Visuals in this movie in general are fantastic. I agree with
that. They're very good.
Between the zero gravity battleground, which is already, I just can't get enough of that already, but then just kind of the war game stuff that we see, it's just all really good looking. It just really sets a unique look for the world that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, question for all three of you. Well, actually, go ahead, Maxwell.
I was just going to say, to the extent of the visuals, I felt like the movie kind of transported me away from Earth for a while. Some science fiction movies are not as convincing as that, but I felt like I was really like in another place, in another world, and it was all very convincing, and it had a sense of like awe to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the strength of the design. You know, it's the little details, like when he's waiting to have at the beginning to have his monitor removed, and from everything from like the little banner ads or posters that they have, you know, the kind of propaganda stuff from, you know, Remember the War, to the design of the machines that do everything for, you know, for the medical machines and things like that. It's just you can tell they put a lot of care into fully realizing the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was your question?
There's actually two of them. First one's a little bit less involved. Did you guys hear them use the word bugger in the movie?
No, they used Formix. Formix is...
They always said Formix, right?
Yeah, they always said Formix. Yeah, I think it was just easier because they wouldn't want to confuse an audience that isn't familiar with having both terms being used. Just like they don't want to throw it back and forth. So I think Formix was just the kind of what they stuck with.
Did Orson Scott Card in... I know he's revised the book a couple of times. Did he change it to always say Formix, or does the newer versions of Ender's Game still say bugger?
I believe the newer versions do still say bugger. I think it's just something within some of the future entries in the series and reference to why it's changed or like it's because buggers is like it's more of like a slang term for these aliens and Formix.
Right.
Kind of way to say it, and I think it just kind of took over eventually.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Second question, a little bit more involved. Did you guys think that this would be a it is sort of in my mind, but did you guys think it's a family movie, and how would parents explain to their children kind of what happens here?
I do think it's a family movie. I mean, for the obvious reason that the main characters are children. But to me, it's the type of family that I like the best. And that's one that leaves issues dangling at the end of the movie that a family can discuss afterwards. And that I think can enrich, you know, make for good, thoughtful conversation about issues that pertain to what's going on in our society now. I mean, war is obviously, unfortunately, a very prevalent fact of our modern life. And I think the film and the book more so, but the film does bring up very interesting questions about the cost of war and the nature of violence, etc. So, you know, I think certain kids may be scared by it or can't handle it, but for families, I think it's, you know, a fun adventure, but that leaves discussion.
I do think it works for a family. I mean, the book itself it's, you know, reading that generally a young adult audience is, or a young adult crowd is supposed to read in school, or, you know, an option for young adults to read in school. It's a young adult novel. It works for all ages. Well, I mean, young adult and beyond, and it actually is required reading in the military. But the story, I think, I agree with what Maxwell had already had to say, and I think just as the movie is intended for, or the book's intended for a younger audience, I think the movie works that way as well. The movie itself is PG-13, and I can see why. I would say, though, along with this, and of all movies after Earth, the movie that, you know, I didn't like, but I don't hate either, I think it kind of works in that same kind of way where it's a, you know, it's a kind of a preteen teenager adventure story, and it, you know, it works for that audience, which, you know, is a large audience. I would say I think it works for kind of the younger crowd as much as it works for the older crowd that read the book when they were younger. So,
Yeah, I think you guys pretty much covered it. Young adult is exactly kind of the phrase that leapt to my mind. But I think you guys bring up a good thing. That's a pretty good comparison to bring up, Aaron, between this and After Earth, in that you can kind of, you know, take them for, I guess, whatever crowd, as a kind of a surface adventure tale, I guess, starring this teenage kid. But I think one of the reasons I ultimately enjoyed this movie so much is that this one, the themes come through in this one so much better. And I was actually really worried about, I had assumed, I think, when the trailers and stuff came out, that this movie would be just kind of like a surface retelling of the story. And just because so much of the book is, you spend so much time in Ender's head, that I just didn't think it would translate well. But I think, and I think we've said this already, that Asa Butterfield does such a good job just kind of conveying all the emotion. Yeah, and there's that great conversation at the end that he has with Harrison Ford's Colonel Graf character that, yeah, I'm kind of amazed how well they succeeded in addressing the themes that are there in the book and bringing them to a film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I give a lot of credit to Gavin Hood. As bad as his Wolverine movie is, I think it was clear he cared about this story and wanted to do the best he could to convey it. And I also think if you go back and look at his film Tsotsi, there are certain thematic similarities between that film and Ender's story.
Yeah, that's something that got me excited for seeing Ender's Game, written and directed by Gavin Hood, because I am a huge fan of Tsotsi. That's the film that won the Best Foreign Film Oscar, actually, back in 2005 or six. Six?
I think six, yeah.
It's a very good movie. I recommend it completely. I don't know if it's on streaming or whatnot, but it does, as Maxwell said, it does have similar themes going on there, and it shows me that Gavin Hood is a person that knows how to handle these bigger films. And Wolverine, as much as I'm like one of the lone defenders of Wolverine, not as a good movie, just as a movie that's not as terrible as other people make it out to be, but I think that's a case where people were literally writing the script on a daily basis with that movie, and he was involved as a directorial standpoint, as a way to kind of bring him into the United States on a, you know, in a bigger way than Rendition was able to do. Yeah, that's his other movie that he did for the U.S. And this movie, it feels much more like he had the time he needed to kind of craft out a story, since he wrote the screenplay this time around, and also kind of put the film that he wanted to put onto screen based off a book that he clearly loves as well. And as much as it's obviously not perfect to me, as much as it can't just be, but it's also not just like, hey, here's the book on screen. Like, it's doing enough to separate itself and be its own thing, and I appreciate that. I also appreciate that it feels like a complete book, complete film. It obviously lends itself to a bigger franchise were the movie to get sequels, but I do feel like I got a whole story here. I don't feel like parts have been... I don't think there's lingering plot threads that I need to be answered, like, immediately, or, you know, that I felt like kind of lingering at the end, like, wow, why wasn't that solved? Like, I feel like I got the movie that I wanted to get based off the story that I really love. I really loved reading when I read it. I also didn't like the score, by the way. How was it?
You did not like it?
I did not. Well, I didn't. It just felt really generic to me, and I was hope. I just, it never caught on to me in a way that would. I feel like I would have, as much as I already liked the movie quite a bit, I feel like I might have liked it even more if I had a score that I really enjoyed, and I didn't really get that from this movie.
If there was like one good theme or something, that would have been really good.
It just feels like it feels like I've heard this in like a PC flight simulator sheet.
Yeah, movies aren't really scored with themes so much anymore, which is unfortunate. Yeah. But I actually, the composer Steve Jablonski is usually pretty generic, but I was actually, I kind of liked it, at least more than you. I liked his use of strings in certain scenes, especially the zero-G battle scenes. It's great, but I thought it worked.
I think it worked in quieter scenes for me, but other scenes it just felt like Transformers, which is what Steve Jablonski's
I guess here, Aaron.
I guess if you're going to be derivative of yourself.
Yeah, there you go. Hans Zimmer's been doing that for years until just
Days of Thunder repeated already.
Another thing I liked, and this is something that does draw from the book too, but I was pleased that they kept it, was the diversity of the characters.
Yes,
in the cast.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I could easily see a version of this film that was whitewashed, and that obviously very clearly wasn't the case. And it was, you know, there was no issue brought up about it. And I just like seeing all these different people, you know, together. And I thought it was a subtle message.
It that feels tied like in... Last Airbender.
It feels like the kind of thing that comes from the fact that this is a film from Summit and made by a South African director, as opposed to like a big film from Warner Brothers that came from like an American director. Like, and not, I'm not saying that that's, you know, the reason, but it does. I think you guys understand what I'm trying to say. I think it comes think it comes from the fact that it's not like a major Hollywood production necessarily, although it is a Hollywood production, obviously, but it's not, it feels like it has people that like wanted to make this movie as opposed to wanted to make a book that makes money. And as much as that's, you know, obviously the ultimate goal as well, I do salute the fact that, yes, we did get to have a wide variety of child actors. And, you know, we also have child actors. They're not necessarily as young as the ones in the book. In the book, they're like six and they go on to age.
Yeah, they're very young.
Yeah. But, like, you can't do that. Like, you can't, 10 years old in the book. Yeah. You can't show that in a movie. I can easily see why you have to age it up a bit. But even then, regardless, the movie, you know, it's called The International Fleet. That's what everyone's a part of. And it feels like The International Fleet. Like, I was very happy to kind of see that in action. So, yeah, I was... Yeah. But that was very, that was something. Thank you, Maxwell, for bringing that up. I almost forgot about that completely because that was something I very much respected to see.
Yeah, and unless I misread the book a bunch of times, they changed one of the major characters to a female from a male. I'm assuming major a white Anderson? Male character. Yeah, they changed him to an African American woman, which is great. Why? Because Viola Davis is awesome. That's why.
Yeah.
You wanted to see me.
You can't resign. You have an obligation to stay here and convince him to do his duty. My father trained horses. I've raised yearlings since I was 5 years old. I know a thoroughbred when I see one. We can't lose him.
My God, you really don't see them as children, do you? It used to be a war crime to recruit anyone under the age of 15.
When the war is over, we can have the luxury of debating the morality of what we do.
When it's over, what will be left of the boy?
What does it matter if there's nothing left at all?
But Viola Davis, by the way, it's like just like Prisoners, like there's... It's not that she's like she has a really multifaceted character to play. She just has one thing to do, but she does it really well. It's
very
like,
well.
I'm very happy.
She's a treasure. She needs, you know, she deserves great roles.
Yeah, and I agree with you about Harrison Ford too. I think I think it's been a good year for Harrison Ford actually, because I think he was very solid in 42 as well.
42.
But I do think he, as much as he's, you know, you look at this role that he's playing, you know. Graph, which is one letter away from gruff, and it seems like a fairly standard way to kind of read Harrison Ford performances. But you kind of get
his voice.
But you get a sense of what he's trying to do in this film, and I like.
Let me tell you something.
I like the relationship that he has with Ender, and I like kind of what makes it challenging in the kind of developments that go on in the film, versus, you know, giving you the idea that, well, he seems friendly to Ender, but also there's something else going on. So it's a nice balance here, and I think Harrison Ford he certainly felt like he was into it. Like, it's a weird thing where with that and like Bruce Willis, where like you watch some of these older actors, they can either be very much into it or they can very much be not into it, and it does feel like Harrison Ford was into this film.
Doing well, top test scores in class, highest battle room ratings, but you have a habit of upsetting your commander.
Find it hard to respect someone just because they outrank me, sir.
Puts you in a difficult position, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
You don't like taking orders from Bonzo?
No, sir.
Perhaps you'd prefer to give them yourself.
Sir.
Aren't you like to lead your own army? Dragon Army.
Sir, I've never heard of a Dragon Army.
We discontinued the name 4 years ago. No Dragon Army ever won a battle.
Then why not a new name, sir?
Because we already have the uniforms.
And, you know, just not to harp on like one of the scenes in the film that I really liked, but there's that particular scene that we're all talking about, the climax, the emotional climax, is it's really great because Harrison Ford as an actor is really yelling at Asa Butterfield, and you know, to some degree you could say like, yeah, well, you know, he's not gonna really yell at him, he's just a kid, whatever, but he's just really emoting a lot of anger and frustration, and I really appreciated that. It's kind of like when Steve Carell pushes that kid in the way back, and you know, he's like, dude, nobody even wants you. I was like, dude, that is deep. That is really sad. So
I don't mean to laugh at that, but
it's just one of those things where if you treat these people as, you know, adult actors and whatever else, you're gonna get a pretty good product. And you know, that gives a lot of credit to the direction, that gives a lot of credit to the actors, and yeah, it's solidly acted, just a few minor characters here and there.
And so we're all on board with Moises Arias as Bonzo?
Yeah, I liked him. I like Moises. I mean, Moises is a weird dude.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is
weird. Yeah.
Because
you guys all watch Kings of Summer?
I only know him from Kings of Summer. Apparently, he was on. You know, he was on.
Hannah Montana for a long time.
That's what makes it such a revelation. For
and
me,
he's been another like kind of similar affair as well. So it's like I have no idea who this person was until this year when I saw Kings of Summer. So I was like, he came on screen and he fits just exactly. I mean, he's playing a character. He's literally required to choose scenery based on what his character is, and it just
he held his own.
Yeah.
He has a convincing intensity for someone of his stature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has
and it's like Gonzo.
It's like a young Joe Pesci.
There are shades of that.
As long as we're talking about minor characters, this is kind of weird, but you know who else I really thought was cool was this guy Nonzo Inosi, who plays Sergeant Dapp.
Oh, yeah. I love that guy.
I just loved him. I thought he was so awesome.
He is in The Gray. He's in The Gray.
What else has he been in?
He was in Game of Thrones.
Thank you.
Yeah, he was from the greatest city ever, Quarth. Quarth.
Yeah, he was great.
But no, yeah, I liked him. He had a nice kind of as serious as this film can be, but it's also fun. I do think he can emphasize some of the fun aspects of this film, and yeah, I enjoyed that. He was in Conan also.
Yeah, and I liked his little relationship he had with Ender also.
Yeah.
The way that the adults and the kids engage on the same level in this movie, and I think that's a theme we've talked about a lot, is just a further evidence of that.
He's currently on Dracula as well. He plays Renfield, because if there's one thing you remember from the story of Dracula, it's that Renfield was a very hulking black man.
Yeah, that's exactly what I remember. Yeah. Bram Stoker wrote that character perfectly.
Bram Stoker was setting up. He was breaking down racial barriers before we were
born. It really was. That guy's a genius.
Let's move on, guys. Let's get to our rating of the film. Each week at Out Now Theater today, we rate films based on when you should go and see them, and we have a scale that goes from IMAX to theater, Dollar Theater, Netflix, HBO, TV, or forget about it. On that scale, Maxwell, where would you put Ender's Game?
I would say see it in IMAX.
Jose?
Yeah, I mean, despite the minor issues that I had with it, see it in IMAX, especially if you're a fan of the book, there's too many moments in there that'll just make you smile.
Abe?
Definitely see it in theaters. Yeah, pretty solid.
I kept like forgetting that this movie wasn't in 3D, by the way. Like I was up to 30 minutes before I saw it, I wasn't quite oh wait, this isn't in 3D. Like that was the thought I had. I really like this movie a lot. I'd say, Zeke, I'd give it an IMAX. I think the sound is really good, too. Like, it's great sound, this movie.
I say see it in IMAX, not necessarily because I think it's, like, top-rated, but because I think it's the format will be good for the visuals and the sound.
For sure, yeah.
Cool.
All right. So that's our thoughts on Ender's Game. Let's do a little movie callback.
Callback.
There's where we, you know, briefly mention a few films that we might have thought of that related in some way to the main feature of the week. And let's start. Jose, any callbacks you got in mind?
Actually, I thought of Gravity, just because what a great time to be a fan of films and space and zero-G.
For sure.
Yeah.
Maxwell?
I'm surprised this isn't a correlation I made before, but a lot of the stuff between the zero-G battles and the way the schools worked reminded me a lot of the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, yeah.
I read one critic who didn't like the movie, like kind of obnoxiously describe it as space Quidditch, but I'm like, yeah, that's kind of exactly what it is.
Abe?
I thought of The Last Starfighter, The Matrix, and that one scene in 2009 Star Trek where they're on planet Vulcan and all the kids are doing those mathematical computations in their own little screens, just because, you know, they're being bred to be child geniuses. Baby geniuses, I should say.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Baby geniuses, too. Super geniuses. This reminds me that I heard a rumor that Joe Cornish from Attack the Block might be directing Star Trek 3, which is actually the one thing that could finally get me interested in a Star Trek movie.
When I heard that news, I was like, I bet Aaron is very conflicted right now.
As far as Ender's Game goes, Starship Troopers came to mind.
The bugs.
The bugs and kind of there's some commentary there. It's like and for kids. You know, Starship Troopers for kids.
No boobs.
Not as many. Hunger Games, War Games.
Yes,
War Games.
WALL-E came to mind, actually. It's just mainly because of that kind of discovery sense that you get in WALL-E and kind of the zero-G stuff. The Matrix, like Abe said, Star Wars, and yeah, After Earth came to mind. It's because this was so much better. All right, so that's callbacks.
Callback.
Let's get to our plug this week. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/shoutnowpodcast. There are over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 device. For you, the listeners of Out Now, Out There, and Enabe, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service, and I have a book to recommend. It's called Speaker for the Dead. It's by Orson Scott Card. It takes place after the events of Ender's Game. Why read a synopsis when I would just spoil the story of Ender's Game? So I'm not going to do that. But if you want to continue on with the story of Ender's Game and you don't feel like waiting for the possibility of a sequel, you could always read Speak for the Dead among the other books in the series. I know some of them are good, some of them aren't as much, but you know.
They're interesting.
There you go.
I will say, if you want more of a, I mean, Speaker is a sequel, but if you want a kind of a direct sequel, this was published more recently. It's called Ender in Exile, and it kind of deals with what happens to him immediately after. Kind of actually takes place between the last few pages of Ender's Game.
All right.
Which is pretty interesting.
Wow, it's almost like Insidious 2.
of course, the obvious example to use. Anyway, you could download any of those books or any other book you want to at audibletrial.com/shoutnowpodcast. That's audibletrial.com/shoutnowpodcast. You can download a book, subscribe to their service for a good 30 days. You can decide you don't want to do anything else with that, but you still get to keep the book that you downloaded for free. So, there you go. Okay, let's move on now. Let's get to Out Now feedback.
Feedback.
This is where we go over some of the various answers that we received on our Facebook and Twitter page, facebook.com/shoutnowpodcast and twitter.com/shoutnow_podcast, where we asked various questions throughout the week and let our listeners respond. Abe, you want to start off?
Absolutely. So we asked a lot of questions sort of related to the theme of the Weekender's Game for the film. And so one of our first questions was, what is your favorite film about a young hero? Scott Mendelson writes, The Omen, the original, of course. I don't know if that's a hero, but yeah, sure. I mean, everything's for Damien.
Nothing but hero.
Yes.
it's all for him. You.
Yeah, exactly. Brandon writes, Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace. Jordan writes, Clifford, I think he's talking about the dog?
No, he's talking about the Martin.
No, the Martin Short movie.
Damn it!
I love that movie.
It's a movie.
Patrick writes, The Neverending Story, Atreyu, not Bastion, which I have to agree with. Atreyu is a good, solid young character, or young hero.
Wow, cool.
And then he writes, not Phantom Menace. Steve writes, Short Round from Temple of Doom. Joshua writes, Hit Girl. Robert James writes Wizard of Oz, and Aaron writes Attack the Block. He's talking about Moses, I'm assuming.
Moses. Favorite leaders in film we have from Izzy. General M. Bison, played by Raul Julia in the 1994 cult classic Street Fighter. I guess not to be confused with Neil McDonough in the 2009 terrible movie, which is related to Legend of Chun Li. Ryan played William Wallace. Steven has Jack Burton and Wang Chi. You know, Jack Burton.
Yeah,
from Big Trouble Little China.
Yeah, Big Trouble Little China, yeah.
Jack Burton, me.
Hey,
and then Philip has Theoden, the King of Rohan, just from life. favorite mentor character in film, for example, Obi-Wan Kenobi, which nobody seemed to choose. Eric has Eric Idle as the prospector in the Dudley Do-Right movie, which I guess is just the wrong answer. Izzy has Billy Grant, Billy Banks, Showdown circa 1993 favorite janitor. What?
Yeah, he wrote that.
Then he has, like, he wrote also, and then there's nothing else to follow that up with.
I think it's his favorite janitor also. I'm not sure.
Okay. Anyway, Philip has Gandalf. Adam has Gordon Gekko from Wall Street. Adam also has Dumbledore from Harry Potter.
From Wall Street.
Dumbledore. He was played by John C. McGinley in that movie. It was great.
He was on the director's cut.
Yeah. Jim Beats, friend of the show, has Rip Torn from Dodgeball. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. Mike Jones has The Dude. Great answer. Jim Deeds was also going to put The Dude. Robert has Burgess Meredith and Rocky. Great answer. Linda has Lester Bangs, Philip Seymour Hoffman from Almost Famous. Corey Stevenson has Ra's al Ghul. NSFW's Gamer Podcasts. Corey Stevenson has Ra's al Ghul. Jason has Dean Mother Effer Jones. Alan Aguilera has Roger Swanson from Roger Dodger. That's a great choice. I like that one. And Maxwell, you put an answer here. Doc Brown.
I did.
And then we asked drill sergeants or anyone in a higher command that you would hate to get into a bad mood. We had some fun answers here, and I watched a lot of YouTube clips from the answers that they wrote. Liz writes Danny DeVito and Renaissance Man.
You'd hate to get Danny DeVito angry and Renaissance Man.
Yeah, you just turn to the Penguin.
I would
hate to get Danny DeVito angry anytime, any place, anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, his low center of gravity gives him a lot of, judo moves against you.
If anyone's seen Lethal Weapon 6, they know that for sure.
Philip writes General Patton, and I think that he's talking about the actual general as well as the actor who played
Patton. As well as George C. Scott, yes.
Graham Loft writes Sergeant Blood, real name of one of his drill instructors. I guess he's from the military or is in the military. And in Movie Land, Viggo Mortensen's character in G.I. Jane. And yeah, that guy's a hard ass. Adam writes Louis Gossett Jr. from An Officer and a Gentleman, which is a great answer.
I've got nowhere else to go!
I think that's an Academy Award winner, Louis Gossett Jr. from Correct. An Officer and a Gentleman. Mike Jones writes Ernie for sure. Maybe the Sarge from Aliens too, and I guess T-O-O, not T-W-O. So I guess he's talking about Apone, maybe?
Yeah, from the Sarge from Aliens.
Yeah.
But I also like that he wrote Aliens too. Like, I wish that was the title of an Alien sequel.
Just like Alien, comma, T-O-O.
Just like Look Who's Talking To.
It's the Wayans brothers take on it.
It's like Sigourney Weaver like shrugging in the poster. Aliens 2.
It happened again.
Joshua writes Major Pain.
Oh my god.
Yeah. William writes Gunny Highway from Heartbreak Ridge, and Jason has Clancy Brown in Starship Troopers, and Tommy Lee Jones any day of the week.
I'm looking up Major Payne right now because I just looked up like the directors for some reason.
I would add Gordon Bombay, but in Mighty Ducks 2.
Yeah, the Mighty Ducks are back, Jack.
They call him Captain. They call him Captain Blood.
Oh, that's why. Major Payne was directed by Nick Castle, who of course played the Shape in the first Halloween movie. And was also
interesting.
Yeah, also the director of The Last Starfighter. That's why it came to that.
Very cool.
I was like, there's like so many connections this week to that person.
What a weird career.
Right. All right, let's move on here. Favorite movie with an alien combatant, like Alien, Star Trek Troopers, etc. Jeanette has Men in Black. Ryan has Independence Day. Adam has John Carpenter's The Thing. Corey Stevenson has Alien, Star Trek Troopers, Battle LA, for some reason, and Pacific Rim. First show, Abe. Battle LA.
Yeah, I know. Battle LA.
Episode one. Eventually, I'll put that back on iTunes, and you guys can jump into the archives of Out Now and listen to how
terrible. You're the bravest Marines that I know!
Philip has Pacific Rim. Izzy has District 9. Great answer. Mike has Aliens, Predator. It's a dead heat for me. I also loved AVP, Requiem. And I'm not afraid to admit it. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
We had a fun commentary with that one.
I hope you listened to it. I hope you got to hear about Dr. Pred Alien. Jason has Monsters vs. Aliens.
You
got to
throw an Attack the Block.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Boom.
My answer applied to many of these questions this week.
Exactly. Such a good movie. Such a good movie.
Okay, let's move on to some questions that you guys gave to us via the Facebook or Twitter page. Graham has, what is the next sci-fi must-see for 2014? Do you guys have an answer for that offhand?
2014?
And I'd say not including various comic book movies, if that's...
I was going to say
2014.
Not 15, to begin, which has, like, everything. Let me see. 2014.
Is that when Guardians of the Galaxy is coming out?
Yeah, but that's exactly superhero movies.
Yeah, I know.
We have things like, well, there's RoboCop, of course. There's what else is there? Like, see, there's some of the stuff you haven't like seen yet. Like, there's the Tom Cruise movie that actually looks pretty good, but only people at Comic Con have seen the stuff for that movie.
Oh, is that the one that was movie?
Tom Cruise's Groundhog's Day movie. That's that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Divergent.
He's remaking Groundhog's Day.
Well, he's like a. It's a future world where there's like kind of a war going on, and there's like mech warriors happening, and like Tom Cruise like dies, but he gets to repeat the same day over and over again to figure out what to do.
It's another like teen book. Is it
Divergent?
Divergent.
No, is it Maze Runner? Is that coming out? I think that's coming out next year.
Maze Runner.
Yeah, Maze Runner. Yeah, it's supposed to come out. Yeah, Maze Runner.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm that. I don't think that's my answer, but I'm just trying to think of things that are coming out.
Let's see. There's oh, I see.
Oh, Godzilla.
Godzilla. There we go. I'm excited.
Oh, Jurassic World.
Jurassic. Yeah. That's not 2014 though. I don't think.
Oh, okay.
Transcendence. The film from Wally Pfister. Christopher.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. There we go.
It's Interstellar next year.
Interstellar, I believe, is next year. Yes.
Transformers 4.
Yeah, of course. Transformers: Age of Extinction.
Transformers 4.
Fast and Furious 7. I assume they go to space in that one.
No, that's number. Oh yes, that is number 7. Damn it! They have to go to space now. Avatar 2.
Well, that's 15. Yeah. Let's see. Dolphin Tale 2, though.
No Paul Hogan in that one, but that's a different Dolphin movie.
Hunger Games is next year.
Hunger Games movie.
True.
I don't know, Pat.
Oh, that Tomorrow World movie. Tomorrow Land.
Oh, Brad Bird's movie.
Yeah, Brad Bird's movie.
That's a good choice.
Yeah, there. I'll go with that. I put my faith in Brad Bird.
The Wachowskis' new movie is next year,
is
supposedly.
Oh, yeah.
Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's a good choice, too. Huh. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Now we've run down sci-fi movies for you, Graham.
Apparently, that Graham movie have Google.
But he loves to hear our answers.
Yeah. He loves the soothing sounds of Abe's voice, and he tolerates me.
All right. Izzy asks us, do you think Jaden Smith will ever have commercial matchup with his father, Will?
No.
I don't think so either.
As I don't think he's a terrible actor, despite After Earth and The Day the Earth still trying to prove me wrong, I do think that on the right project, he's, you know, a talented young actor. I just don't think he's ever going to be put in the same position that Will has, where Will Smith has done certain things that just ensure him box office success throughout much of his career.
I mean, unless he makes, like, Parents Don't Understand Part 2, then no.
I think the issue is that he's not funny.
Yeah, that helps.
You don't
really look at Jaden for charisma right now.
Yeah. I mean, I happen to think he's not bad in Karate Kid, but he's not funny, and that's I think
the supporting cast really helps him out in that movie a lot. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to be Will Smith anymore.
Yeah,
that's a bigger issue, right?
Yeah, Will Smith is one of the very, very, very few people that can sell a movie based off the fact that Will Smith is involved in it. And so,
not After Earth, though.
Well, and that's like, that's kind of a.
I think people got the idea that was a Jaden show.
My guess is he ends up in Independence Day 2.
You think so? I heard that they wrote 2 scripts for that film.
Hear that. I feel like he was waiting to see how After Earth did to make up his mind.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's like why he did Men in Black 3 after 7 Pounds failed. I mean, there's just
I totally forgot that there was a movie called 7 Pounds.
Which he's terrific in as an actor, but I mean, it's just if he keeps securing the status as a, you know, world star, I mean, he has to do some of these big properties.
I feel like Independence Day 2 with Will Smith could be one of the biggest movies ever.
I agree.
People
shouldn't count out Roland Emmerich movies, by the way. Despite White House Down not performing well, people forget that 2012 made like $800 million. Like,
I really liked White House Down.
White House Down was fun. Oh my god! But
I can't wait to get that on Blu-ray.
Yeah, it comes out. We'll get to that. April asks if you could remake any movie. Dream director, dream actors in every role. What would it be?
Oh,
yeah, this kills me right there.
RoboCop with Paul Claymation. Paul Claymation. It'd be amazing.
With Danny Elfman as RoboCop.
Danny Elfman. Yeah,
where's
sure.
my hand? I cannot shoot.
What was that one video game back in the day on Sega and Super Nintendo where they had like clay action fighters and
clay
like a
fighter.
Snowman.
That's called Clay Fighter.
It's a
clay fighter.
It was a very easy title to remember.
But it'd be exactly like that. You know, it's all bloody and stuff, because that's exactly how RoboCop is.
What's that game about that girl you're supposed to rescue? I think her name is Zelda. What's that? What's it?
Legend of Link.
So, there's this old film, Marty, that Paddy Chayefsky wrote. I think it'd be really interesting to see that movie directed by the Duplass brothers, starring Jonah Hill.
That's pretty good.
I don't know how to follow that.
I'm a fan of the Duplass brothers.
I'll say a Coen brothers remake of M with Steve Buscemi.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty good. That's yeah. Mm,
darn.
What if like I just want to see like they already experimented with black and white with Man with No Name or
what a beautiful film.
Man Who Wasn't There. I'd love to see them kind of had tackle like German expressionism in their own way with Steve
German Buscemi's, expressionism
with Steve Buscemi's crazy eyes and playing the Peter Lorre part of him.
Nice little riff on Fritz Lang.
Crazy eyes. Is there a Tumblr page for that where it's like Steve Buscemi's crazy eyes and other people?
I think it's just called Steve. Yeah, the Steve Buscemi eyes.
Yeah, something a little bit more recent. I tell you, the Coen brothers taking on the Counselor and seeing how that could.
Oh, good one. Yeah. With Angelina Jolie or Catherine Zeta-Jones recasted with Cameron Diaz as well?
Yeah, there'd be some casting changes, but you know, just give me more of a better taste in my mouth about that film.
Let's move on.
Yeah, and then we have a question that asks us from Izzy. Everyone can ask this; it doesn't have to be necessarily true. But pop quiz, hotshot! You have a chance to recast any Keanu Reeves movie. Who do you cast?
Garrett Hedlund.
in all of them?
Yeah. I didn't even have to think about that.
Like, I'd say somebody British in Dracula. I think that's a good...
somebody start. British in Dracula.
Okay. Garrett Hedlund in... how could I forget the Patrick Swayze movie? His
Point Break, of course.
Thank you. God, that was the worst blank I've ever had. Yeah.
What would he do in Point Break? Just be like, hey, Brody.
He'd be like,
lost
be
track
like
of time, huh?
I am an FBI agent. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd say a lot of folks.
I'd just say Dracula. I can't think of any other movie that he's like miscast in.
Oh.
Street Kings?
Well, no, that movie's just terrible regardless. Like, it's not his fault. And I think that's that later stage where he's actually become an actor that chooses roles that fit him as an actor.
I feel like I want somebody else for Constantine. I just don't know who.
Someone blonde and British, perhaps?
Yeah.
You know, like Constantine? like the character of Constantine?
Then you'd have, like, you'd have Priest Part 2 with Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany would make a pretty good Constantine, actually.
He probably would, yeah. Glad you mentioned it.
I'd watch something. Hellblazer with Paul Bettany. That'd be sweet. last question from Jason. Do you I think Abe and I, we can answer this at the same time. Do you think we're going to get a Kick-Ass 3? No. That's
probably not.
No. I highly doubt
that. Based off of math,
yeah. When you spend more money and then make less money than the first movie, that doesn't really add up to it. Hey,
is there even material that exists for that movie?
Yeah.
Mark Millar is currently releasing his Kick-Ass 3.
He's writing comic
comics.
Right,
so.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, aren't you excited?
Oh,
all right. Well, that was great.
Yeah, thank you for all that feedback. That's
feedback.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah, we did the feedback. Let's get to our box office. Each week we go over the box office total and find out if our previous predictions were anywhere close to what actually happened. Last week, Abe, do you remember what you predicted for Ender's Game?
Yes, I think I said first place, I think 31.9 or something like that.
Wow. Yeah, you called it. You guessed 31.9 million. Yeah. Yep, you did that. last week we had just seen it. Sean and Liz on the show. Sean predicted 42. Liz said 20 something. What did I say? I said first place. I think I said like 37, actually. I'm pretty sure I did say that. Doesn't matter, though. Ender's Game came in first place this weekend with 28 million, which is, you know, fine. Like, it's not breaking the bank, but it's also not, you know, it's more money than any of the previous book adaptations have made this year and their entire domestic runs just about. So whether or not that leads to future things for Ender's Game, I don't know. But worldwide, it'll probably clean up, you know, as much as it needs to. And it cost less than something like After Earth, which I think was like nearly $200 million. So
wow. That's a huge budget. Yeah. Plus, I attribute it to Halloween. So people were still in their candy comas and they didn't go out and see anything.
There's also a lot of things that happened. Like Las Vegas came out this weekend as well. That hit third place, 16 mil. Freebirds also debuted with 16 mil.
Oh, so Freebirds probably take away from some of the children going to go see Ender's Game. There you go.
Hey, perhaps.
I'm just making excuses.
I still need to go see that.
No, you don't. Jackass Bad Grandpa still in second place with a very small drop, actually, and still made another 20 million this weekend.
Should I see that one?
I thought it was funny. If you like Jackass movies, then, you know, why not?
I enjoyed 3 a lot.
I do too. Well, quite a bit, actually. Gravity, still, you know, top 10. It's in fifth place.
Great. Yeah.
12 Years a Slave got a big bump because it expanded to a lot of
theaters. It finally went to all theaters, yeah.
So yeah, it's making some money for, you know, a 2.5 hour slave drama. Let's see what else happened. The Counselor is now in 10th place after debuting in 2nd place last weekend.
Still in top 10.
Let's see. About Time, that's that one from...
That's the one, Richard, from the dude from...
Richard Curtis.
The Richard Curtis film.
Yeah.
I really want to see that, actually.
I do, too. I'm hearing really good things about it, and I know it was just a minimal release, or a limited release this weekend. I know it expands.
It's about 350 theaters this weekend.
Yeah, so... It'll expand next weekend and be something.
Which one is that again?
That's one of Rachel.
That's the one where they can travel back through time by holding their hands together in their closet.
Yes. Well, how do you say that guy's name? Gleason.
Bill Nighy?
Domhnall.
Domhnall? Okay. So it's
yeah, he's okay. Brendan Gleason's son.
Yeah. He was in the Harry Potter movies, right?
Yeah, he played the oldest Weasley, Bill Weasley. But yeah, he's Brendan Gleason's son.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow, he's so much thinner.
Well,
than his father.
Fatness is not necessarily hereditary. There,
I'm just being an asshole.
It was at their house last weekend. Brendan ate the burger. Domhnall had the can.
He was also in Dread. He plays the kid with the computer stuff in his eyeball.
In his eyeball, yeah.
I loved him in Never Let Me Go.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the guys that get to go out for, like, a leap year or something like that.
He has a certain gentleness to him that's very appealing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right, so let's move on now. What time is it, Abe?
Oh, well, Aaron, I think it's time for us to play some games. That was enderific today.
Thank you. That's, of course, the improv theme for games, and I believe Abe has one for us to play today.
Yes, it is a one of those games that everyone kind of wins. It's which movie made more?
What, WMMDs?
WMMDs?
WMMDs, which made more dough?
Yeah, so this has some of the stars of the film for Ender's Game, including Austin Butterfield, Ben Kingsley, and a lot of Harrison Ford. So here we go. So... number one, Raiders of the Lost Ark or Return of the Jedi?
Return of the Jedi.
I'll say Jedi.
All you guys are correct. $212 million for Raiders of the Lost Ark and $252 million for Return of the Jedi. Number two, Won't Back Down with Octavia Spencer. Wait, Octavia Spencer? What am I saying? Viola Davis. And Paranoia.
Paranoia. Oh, there's
one that was just released this year.
Yeah, I got it.
Won't Back Down.
I'll say Paranoia.
Okay. Won't Back Down.
It's actually Paranoia. Won't Back Down. $5.3 million. Paranoia. $7.3 million.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
those are some high grocers.
Watch out. All right, number three, Blade Runner, or K-19 the Widowmaker.
Ooh.
K-19 the Widowmaker.
I'll also say K-19, the Widowmaker.
Okay. Yes, this seems like a trick question. K-19, the Widowmaker.
That is correct. Blade Runner made 27.5, and K-19 has 35.1.
Ooh, that was like a big bomb, too.
And what's interesting, which one is certainly more remembered?
Yeah, I got it. I still go to K-19 parties after certain months.
At the end of the day, box office means shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a submarine for Halloween.
German submarine officers, right? Yeah, everyone loves that. But...
I was a submarine. Right,
number four.
Ever since the Americans attacked.
Yeah. There won't be an America to go back to. All right. number four. Prisoners or Little Miss Sunshine with Abigail Breslin?
Little Miss Sunshine. Definitely
Little Miss Sunshine.
Okay. Aaron?
I said a Little Bit Sunshine.
Oh, everyone, A Little Bit Sunshine? It's actually Prisoners.
Ah, really?
59.949, and then Little Miss Sunshine, 59.891.
Wow.
Yeah. Why did I feel like Little Miss Sunshine was like a $100 million movie? Huh.
I feel like that too, so that's why I'm verifying, because I'm concerned about that. Maybe we're thinking of Juno. Right.
Verification check.
Oh, yeah, Juno was bigger. Yeah. Huh.
Number five.
Worldwide, it was 100.
Number five, Firewall or Gandhi?
Gandhi.
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 Firewall.
Well, okay, it's Gandhi. 52.7 million versus 48.7.
Prisoners.
Number six.
Prisoners has 102 million worldwide, by the way, so it's still beating Bloom,
essentially. Wow. On the worldwide?
Yeah.
I was just going domestic.
I know, I was just, just curious at that point.
Number six. Patriot Games or 42?
Patriot Games.
42.
Oh, wait, no.
42.
That's a good question. I'm changing. I'm going to 42.
You guys are all correct. 95 million versus 83.3.
Wow, 42 did well.
Yeah, 42. Yeah, it picked up some bucks.
Yeah. All right, number seven, Schindler's List versus Cowboys and Aliens.
Schindler's List.
Okay, all three of you guys?
Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah.
It's actually Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh, my God.
So let me guess what Schindler's List, because Cowboys and Aliens made, like, 101 or something. Like, what's Schindler's List?
Yeah, 100.2.
So Schindler's List was, like, 90-something, maybe?
Yep, 96.06.
Okay.
Yeah.
If we're adjusting for inflation, though, Schindler's List is the winner, so.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. We were all adjusting for inflation in our heads.
It's a much better film.
Well, that doesn't matter in terms of money.
Number eight, Hugo with Ben Kingsley and Asa Butterfield, or 6 days, 7 nights?
Six Days,
7 Nights.
Maxwell, you're correct. 6 days, 7 nights. 74.3, and Hugo is 73.8.
Oh, I thought Hugo got to like 90.
That 3D bump?
I really thought Hugo made it to like 90.
Hugo is so wonderful.
Oh my God, it is. I'm so happy that like Asa Butterfield is clearly like a good actor and not just like, hey, I was good in this movie once. Like, it's like, yes.
Yeah.
I can't wait to
take that next time more.
That movie has a special place in my heart because I went to the first date with my girlfriend on that movie.
Aww.
True story.
It's one of the rare movies where
number nine.
Yeah, it's one of the like rare movies where I had such a different opinion after seeing it again with Hugo. Like, I already liked it, but like, just, it was like a kind of a weird screening I had for it. And I was like really cold and wasn't really into it as much as I wanted to be. And after seeing it again, I was like, oh my God, Hugo's so good.
That's the Scorsese magic.
There it is.
It is.
I'm thinking like a Kanye music.
Great 3D.
In right there.
Yeah, beautiful 3D.
That opening tracking shot was beautiful.
Yep.
I mean, the 3D in that was good, but I mean, Gravity is the best 3D of all time. Oh. I'm gonna let you finish.
All right, I'm gonna let you finish. All right, two more. Number nine, Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom versus The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, Empire Strikes Back.
That's a tough one.
Okay, so that's Maxwell.
I'll say Empire because they got those re-release money. So.
Okay. Well, this is not including the stuff.
Temple of Doom, just to.
I can guarantee you it includes that the 1990s like re-release.
So yeah, it is The Empire Strikes Back with 209, and Temple of Doom is 179.
I figured it'd be because I know Empire is like the least grossing, but I figured it still probably has to make enough.
Yeah, it's big bucks. All right, last one, The Help versus Air Force One.
The Help.
I'm gonna say Air Force One.
And you are correct.
It's like
179
yeah.
169.7. The Help made a lot of
Air
money.
Force One was that big of a hit. Wow.
I think it was like the number one movie that year, if I'm not.
I kind of love that movie too. Get off my plane.
Take that, Gary Oldman. And the father or the foster father from Terminator 2.
Air Force One. Let's see. 1997.
It was like 97.
It was the fifth. Oh, that's a big year. Titanic, Men in Black, Lost World, Liar Liar, Air Force One, As Good as It Gets, Good Will Hunting, the re-release of Star Wars, My Best Friend's Wedding, and Tomorrow Never Dies. That's the top 10.
There ain't no way any movie is number one in 97 except for Titanic.
Yeah.
It's like, excuse me.
I didn't think about the year with Air Force One.
I'm surprised it still made that much money. That's a lot of big movies.
Face Off is 11th, Batman and Robin's 12th, and George of the Jungle is 13. And I legit love George of the Jungle. That's a funny movie.
Man.
That is one of my favorite
Brendan
movies.
Brendan Fraser was very likable.
He is. Yeah. It's like,
who doesn't love that gorilla that wears glasses?
And it's super it's super winky. Like, it completely like winks in the face at like what kind of movie it's supposed to be.
Like, even the narrator is like winking at you.
Yeah.
Even the,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, excuse me, but he's a narrator. You don't see his face, so you don't know that he's waiting.
Well, I'm sorry, Maxwell, of the Ichabod Boom. Crane podcast.
I am a noted right, so literalist.
All right, Abe.
That's how you play games.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Let's get to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are new movies coming out on DVD, Blu-ray, and what have yous this week. First up, we have White House Down.
Yay.
Woo.
Awesome. Awesome.
I had a lot of fun with this movie. Grown Ups 2, I think Maxwell went out and saw this.
I did, actually, just to prove a point.
I did too, and I regret that.
We also have The Hobbit, the extended edition of The Hobbit: An Unexpected Journey.
Naturally.
Which I've been told has a goblin song in it, so that should be something. Or a troll song.
I enjoyed it. I don't enjoy that.
I just don't like. It's like, yeah, all right, that happens. Like, let's get to the next one. I just, whatever. It looks great, kind of.
I want
to
see a dragon.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Jose. let's right. see. Also out, Mad Men Season 5 comes out on Blu-ray. So all the Mad Men fans like that. Twilight, the complete series, comes out this week on Blu-ray. So you can get every single Twilight movie ever.
And I already pre-ordered that.
Okay. I hope it comes with, like, a baby or something, like, as a
what?
A little young non-vampire baby or whatever the hell.
With, I think that's illegal. Fangy vagina.
There you go.
That's even weirder. This is the weirdest conversation I've ever been in.
All right, so that's what's coming out this weekend.
Those movies are really fucking weird.
let's move on. Let's get into what we're going to talk about next week, which is, of course, Thor: The Dark World, or as I'm calling it, Thor 2, still Thor. This is a big movie. I'm excited for it just because I like Thor, and I like his smile. Abe and I, that's our eighth episode.
That's a great episode that we did.
We quite enjoyed Thor and all the frost giants that were present there. So now 16. We finally have a sequel, and let's see what happens there. But what do we think Thor is going to do at the box office? Let me give you some box office
history. Anything else coming out with it this weekend?
No, because it's Thor. It's its own reckoning.
Yeah.
the Book Thief opens on 4 theaters. 12 Years a Slave expands. And if you're not going to see Thor, you might as well see Chiwetel Ejiofor get whipped. About Time expands.
Or do some whipping.
But yeah, so it's pretty much Thor. I can tell you right now, let's see. The first Thor opened in May of 2011 to 65 million. It's not going to, well, I don't know. Actually, it could make Iron
I don't know,
Man.
I mean,
first Iron Man made 98, Iron Man 2, 128, Iron Man 3. It's not going to make that amount of money, so it doesn't matter. Captain America also made 65 in its opening. Incredible Hulk made 55 in its opening. So that's.
When did Captain America get released? Was that in the summertime
July.
As well?
Three months after Thor. So.
July.
Okay. Well, this is November release, which is.
This is a new one for Marvel. So.
Yeah, I'm going to say a first place, but with 48.7 million.
These decibels you're giving.
No way. Yeah. I'll say first place with 95 million.
Okay.
95. I will also be bold and say first place.
Thank you.
And I'm going to go, what did you say, Maxwell? 95?
Yeah, I
said 95. And Abe, you said
48.7.
Oh, okay.
That's a
good range there. Good range.
Yeah.
Let's go slightly below Maxwell, and I'll say 85.
Okay. That's nice, because I'm going to go slightly below Jose and say a solid 75.
Mm. All right.
All right. Okay. It's going to make 74, and Abe is going to win.
Wait. Yes. Yeah, I'm playing the low bet here.
Oh, it's a regular weekend, so that helps. It does have that 3D bump, just like the first Thor did, actually.
I just think these Marvel movies now are playing more like sequels to the Avengers than sequels to their original movies.
It helps, yeah.
Certainly, it definitely does.
But even then, the argument could be made that that the Avengers was mostly a Thor sequel in terms of whose story we were following, in terms of like Loki's the key antagonist.
Yeah,
like,
definitely. I mean Loki's probably as popular as any of the heroes.
Oh, easily. Tom Hiddleston has certainly become quite the thing for people.
Who doesn't love Hiddleston?
He also has a great smile.
Yeah, between like, I'm surprised that we haven't had an announcement for like the Tom Hiddleston Benedict Cumberbatch Road movie yet. So. Where they like they follow around Steve Coogan and on the trip.
they all get impressions of Michael Caine.
Exactly.
No. All right. Hiddleston has to do his Owen Wilson. That's
and his Samuel L. Jackson.
He has a Samuel L. Jackson. I'm on YouTube.
It's
now.
Yeah, it's really good.
I'll put that in the show notes if I can find it.
Show note that, yeah.
Yeah. I'm writing that down right now here. This is me typing Tom Hiddleston, ring Samuel L. Jackson. That's how you make interesting podcasting when you're typing and not talking about the show. Okay, guys.
You're going to type right in.
We've had a lot of fun this week, but that's going to have to do it for this week's episode about Dave. I know. You can, of course, find more of my work on my personal blog, dakotazeke.com, where you can find all my written movie reviews as well as my Blu-ray reviews at whysoblue.com. You can also find me at Twitter at twitter.com/Aaron's PS3. I might be holding up the Aaron's PS4 for now because I might be canceling my pre-order. Infamous doesn't come out till next year. Infamous doesn't come out till next year, guys, so I don't know.
Fans want you to be PS4.
I should take it just before someone else takes Aaron's PS4, but I don't know, guys. Yeah. We'll see.
The guy who's not as cool, now you're going to get like zero Twitter followers.
That's the reason.
Yeah. Hashtag.
I know.
I mean, my Twitter has nothing to do with PlayStation, and I have more followers than you. So.
Dropping the gauntlet. All right. Abe, where can people find more of your work?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose. Hashtag, I don't know what.
Good one. Maxwell Haddad.
You could follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/cinemaxwell, and similarly, you can find me on the web at cinemaxwell.com.
And Jose Cordova.
Yeah. Yep, I'm on Twitter at Jose Cordova, so there's that. And thethoughtfulslacker.blogspot.com. I haven't been too active on there. I'm in my last semester of getting my degree, and that's kind of been kicking my butt a little bit.
Oh, mazel tov.
Thank you. If you head over to the Celebrity Cafe, usually Saturday nights or early Sunday mornings, you'll find my Legend of Korra recaps. And awesome. Yeah, so that's fun.
That's been cool. I've been enjoying reading those, actually, as Korra. The Legend of Korra is a show that I quite enjoy.
Oh, and you can also check me out at the Ichapod Cranecast.
Of course.
There you go.
More on that in a second here. You can, of course, find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes and at Stitcher, as well as at hhwlod.com, where you can find our show there, along with the other great shows, including the Ichapod Cranecast, the weekly show that covers the Fox TV series Sleepy Hollow. A new episode will be coming out this week. Walking Dead TV podcast. I'm actually on that show pretty regularly now as well. That's the show that covers The Walking Dead, of course, as well as Long Box of Doom, fun show about comics, and other shows there about comics, games, fun stuff like that.
You can also find us over at outnow.podman.com, where you can find the latest releases as well as exclusives such as our nights and also fun stuff like Q&As. You can also check out our YouTube page at youtube.com/outnowpodcast, where you can find the main reviews of the week, 20, 30 minutes each.
outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to email us there and let us know your thoughts on Ender's Game or the book or the movie versus the book or whatever other versus scenarios you can think of that you'd want to populate our email with.
Also, check us out over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where you can interact with us, we'll interact with you, and we'll answer your questions as well as read your answers out on the air.
And of course, twitter.com/outnow_podcast, you can follow us there and, you know, compete with the Facebook list like number.
Yeah, seriously, we really want to catch up because Facebook is taking all of our likes. Anyway, check us out over at outnowpodcast.tumblr.com, where you can find our latest reviews as well as fun things we find around the internet.
Yeah, so there we go. Maxwell and Jose, thank you for joining us today to discuss Ender's Game.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Definitely a good time. Can't wait to be back for the next Dwayne Johnson movie.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
Yes. But yeah, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Next week, we'll be talking about Thor. That should be a lot of fun. I'm excited for Thor. But until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
Also, happy Guy Fawkes Day. Thank you. Good night.
No question, when I was younger, I held some dumb beliefs and used some words I shouldn't have said. I learned them in the streets. I read some sci-fi and played Super Nintendo. That's why I was so drawn to this story in a book called Ender's Game. See, Ender, he was smaller, and he learned how to fight. In battle school, that little kid, you know, he did alright. And about that time, I content in watching Magneto just do his thing. And Ender's Game became the speaker for the dead and Xeno's side, and read the last page of Children of the Mind. But I put them books aside because I found the man who made them was full of irrational hatred. I read them in his statements. I made it a conscious decision to stop reading the series then. That's when Ender's Game truly came to an end. Superman was real, you know I think he feel. He wouldn't want a man of hate to tell his story. If Superman was real, you know the Man of Steel, he'd say all people could just share in the glory. In the sun because it shines on like all shapes and colors, sisters and brothers. He'd want humanity to just love one another, whether same sex or hetero. He'd say it's better though, if you find love, don't let it go. You are not alone. Now that I'm older though, I learned from past mistakes. Back when I was an ignorant ingrate, I've changed my ways. That's why I can't forgive the art for the creator, because I know the views can change later. But Picard is still a hater, and hate has got no place nowhere on Superman's face. Not from the dirt on his boots or every tear in his cape. He fought for something great, and greatness lies in helping the world come together. For every Lex Luthor, neocon, whatever, and we can all change for the better. And there's few things that's better example through stormy weather, whether rain or shine. You know that S on his chest stands forever. That's why Superman is just better than some author with a record of hate. And believe me, yo, I used to be a fan of his. Every book was great. And though I buy Superman sometimes today, I think this here's gonna make me go back to my high school ways. Superman was real, you know I think he'd feel. He wouldn't want a man of hate to tell his story. If Superman was real, you know the Man of Steel, he'd say all people could just share in the glory.
I was so sad that that wasn't the trailer for the Rocks.
The Rocks version? Movie. Yeah.
You don't understand how disappointed I was when I clicked that.
Ever since the aliens attacked.
Oh my goodness.
Let me see if I can find the actual like line that he has to say. If I can find more graph lines.
You've been working on that one.
I took a breath on that one.
Grumpy Harrison Ford.
Grumpy Harrison Ford. Best. Yeah. It's like that and like Walter Cronkite and fucking Walter Matthau mixed together.
I can definitely see the Walter Matthau. Walter Cronkite, he's an American treasure. Don't make fun of him.
That was Walter Matthau.
Okay, exactly. Thank you. Abe, I was waiting for you to do your classic Ben Kingsley Australian accent.
No, it's actually New Zealand because he's Maori.
This one?
I
yeah.
I confused.
Come on, man.
Use the Kiwi with an Aussie. He's Maori. I went there.
Yeah. I can't even do one. Amazerakum. That's actually just like some sad dog.
I like when you start, then you immediately pause and say, I can't do it, and then you continue trying to do it anyway.
That's he just wants him a full inside. He just wants to succeed.
That's how you play bloopers. here we go. All right.